warm hello to our listeners out there. My name is Geraldine Joseph, and I am the Senior Analyst in charge of developing and delivering programs in the Central Banking, Leadership and Governance domain at the Southeast Asian Central Bank's Research and Training Center, or for short, the CSEN Center. The CSEN Center, based in Kuala Lumpur, serves its membership of central banks in the Asia-Pacific region through its learning programs, research work, and networking and collaboration platforms for capacity building and central banking knowledge. This is the inaugural dialogue session under our CSEN Step Up to Lead podcast, where I will be speaking with exemplary leaders not only from the CSEN community, but outside the CSEN grouping, including the private sector. The key remit is to provide an opportunity for central bank staff of all levels to learn from other leaders, particularly the what, why, and how of their leadership skills and experience in developing as high-performing leaders. For this very first podcast, please join me in welcoming Dr. Hans Gernberg, the former Executive Director or Head of the CSEN Center, also the 8th Executive Director, whose term ran for 4 years until the 30th of June 2019. Hans is now attached with the Asia School of Business in collaboration with MIT Sloan as Professor of Economics and Associate Director of Central Banking. What a privilege to have you with us, Hans.
Thank you, Geraldine. It is indeed a great pleasure for me as well to be back at CSUN, even if briefly, to talk to you about my view on leadership and other issues that you may want to explore.
So Hans, if I may kickstart our conversation, you have had an illustrious career involving 10 years in several organizations. For the benefit of our listeners, please briefly talk us through your professional journey and how you landed the role of the CSEN Center Executive Director.
Yes, it's been a very interesting professional journey. I started my career as an academic in Geneva, Switzerland, where I was a professor of economics at what was then called the Graduate Institute of International Studies. During summer breaks and some sabbaticals, I had the opportunity to visit central banks. Some out in this region, the Reserve Bank of Australia, State Bank of Vietnam, and the Hong Kong Monetary Authority. And that, of course, piqued an interest in Asia. And when the opportunity came to become the executive director of research, head of research at the Hong Kong Monetary Authority, I jumped on the possibility to join a central bank, because I had been teaching about central banks, about monetary policy, but as an academic, now I could be part of an institution like the Hong Kong Monetary Authority. So that lasted for a little over 5 years. I then took 3 years off, so to speak, from central banking and went to the IMF to lead projects at the Independent Evaluation Office of the IMF. But then Asia came calling again. I was asked if I was interested in joining the CSEN Center as an advisor on secondment from Bank Negara. And that's what started me off at the CSEN Center, and that eventually led to becoming the executive director. And I'm extremely happy for that. Of course, now that has, I've started a new chapter going back to academia at the Asia School of Business, but it's still involves central banking, because I joined the Asia School of Business to set up a Master of Central Banking course, which is quite a unique undertaking, and it's very exciting to be part of that venture.
Thank you, Hans. Interesting. With that, please share with us what you perceive have been your milestones in leading the CSEN Center. Indeed, the one thing that jumps to my mind is how you steadfastly steered the major restructuring of the CSEN Center in 2015, 2016. Do share with us your pivotal leadership moments in relation to these milestones. What do you think were the foremost positive differences from the time when you left the CSEN Center compared to when you first took up the role of the CSEN Center Executive Director?
Yes, Geraldine, the restructuring, as you probably remember, was quite a difficult part to steer, because it involved a major reorientation of the CSEN Center from being an institution that was fairly heavy on support staff and light on professionals in the area of economics and supervision, payment system, leadership and governance. The major effort that was involved in the restructuring of the center was to hire a number of professional staff in the area of leadership and governance, macroeconomics, payment systems, supervision and regulation of banks. And that was quite rewarding in the sense of being able to try to attract individuals who wanted to come to the center and to see them succeed in the role and to see them build programs that have been very successful. And I think that is what I take away from this restructuring exercise, more than the difficulty of changing the nature of the organization in terms of support staff versus professional staff, which was of course a very important part, but the pleasure I got from seeing the new staff arrive and succeed in their work was something I will treasure forever.
And given your profound experience in leading different organizations and human capital, as well as observing other leaders, how do you personally define leadership?
That's, of course, a very difficult question. But I think one important thing is to focus on the goals you're trying to achieve. And by goals, I mean the goals for the organization, not necessarily goals for yourself, although those are important, but you're a leader of an organization, and that's what you should focus on. I think in order to succeed, then you have to be able to acknowledge good performance in your co-workers, be able to give them credit and not take credit for their work. Give credit to your co-workers so that they feel that they are being appreciated. I think that is extremely important.
For today's central banker, how crucial would you perceive the need to build leadership skills if compared to the need to strengthen the knowledge and skills in the more technical areas, for example, macroeconomics and financial supervision?
Technical skills are of course very important, but I think that being able to acknowledge the necessity of new and changing skills is crucial in this fast-changing environment. So a leader must be flexible and open to new ideas. At the same time, she must be very focused on the ultimate goal of the organization. So you have to balance the the focus on where you want to go, with the flexibility to understand there might be different ways to achieve it, and allow your co-workers to experiment and suggest the best way forward.
So you do see that it is important for central bankers to build these leadership skills, Hans?
Yes. Of course, personally, I must confess that I have never taken a leadership development course myself. I take the view for myself, in any case, that I try to lead by example. Try to do the best as I can, hoping that will rub off onto my co-workers and colleagues, and instill in them the idea that that they should be empowered to take their own ideas, but at the same time recognize that we need to work towards a common goal of the organization.
In your opinion, Hans, what makes a successful leader stand out from the crowd of mediocrity? What are the top three skills you think a leader needs to have? Of course, you could draw from your experience.
I think it's important to inspire, being able to inspire people to do their best, and at the same time also empowering them to work on their own ideas, and therefore a leader need to support his or her co-workers when they do take initiatives, and not try to impose a certain type of working solutions on everyone. So again, you need to empower your co-workers, and that I think is very, very important in order to get the best work out of them.
So empowering features very strongly in your leadership attributes.
That's what I've been trying to do, and that's what I continue to try to do in my new role. And also, thinking further back, that's what I always attempted to do when I was supervising students in their PhD dissertation or master dissertation, to make them feel that they are doing something that is important, that they're making progress, and that they are feel that are being recognized for their work.
And Hans, what's the best way you think to build that leadership skill? Let's talk about empowering, since it features very strongly in your leadership DNA.
I think it's very important to listen to your co-workers, and not to shut yourself off in your the proverbial corner office. And that's what I have always tried to do here at CSUN, before that when I was a professor, and now at the Asia School of Business. Always keep my door open and also walk around in the office and talk to coworkers to get a feel for what their concerns are, and try to understand, even if they don't necessarily express them, try to see from body language if they are feel like they are being supported in their roles and appreciated.
On that note, what is your view on what makes for effective leadership training and development?
That is probably the hardest question so far you've asked me. And I haven't really studied leadership as such, as a discipline. What I think is important is learning by doing. You can't become a leader, as far as I'm concerned, by some theoretical model or reading books. You have to practice it. And of course, that means that you, as a leader now, have to empower your staff in their positions as leader of a group or a team to exercise that leadership in as they see fit, and when you think that they need to have some, be given some suggestions, you give them suggestions, but they have to learn on the job, so to speak. And that is, I think, is something which takes time, but I do not see shortcuts. Of course, there are leadership training courses, and the Season Center, of course, provides those courses to member institutions, and those can be of great help to get people thinking about issues that others have gone through, and also learning from each other.
Thank you, Hans. If I may shift gears a little, which is most important to you? Mission, core values, or vision, and why?
For me, core values is critical. It's essential for anyone, leader or not leader. Integrity and a sense of fairness, I think, is also very important. Of course, you have to have a goal or a vision, but that is something that can change. If you change an organization, you might have a different vision for that organization, and so you must stay true to what your core values are, and then you can more easily achieve the vision and strategies that whatever organization you are working in requires you to try to achieve. So this is where I think it is important that you not focus on yourself as much as and your own success as much as the success of the organization you're working for. I think some leaders or some individuals focus too much on their own development to the exclusion of the development of the organization they are working for. And that is, I think, will eventually lead to a situation where you will fail in your job.
Which core value sticks out as the most important for you?
Well, I think, as I said a moment ago, I think the integrity and being true to what you fundamentally believe, and that you must behave in such a way that you don't regret something in the future, in terms of having been fair to your co-workers and your colleagues, and being able to empower them to do their best.
I like this notion of core values. If I might probe a little more, do you think you have arrived, and by that I mean, do you think you have found your purpose in life? If so, how did you discover your purpose?
Well, I feel very happy with my journey as from an academic to central banking to the IMF and then back to central bank training. So I feel that I have accomplished not necessarily what I set out to do, because I didn't have a big plan for my journey. But I think where I am now, I've accomplished a number of things, both at the Hong Kong Monetary Authority, and perhaps what I feel most proud of is what I accomplished at the CSUN Center. I think it was a situation where, when I first joined, my perception was that morale was not very high, and by the time I left, I think things had changed for the better. And as I said at the time when I did leave, I enjoyed coming to work every morning, because I felt like the atmosphere in the office was nice. It was supportive. People were supportive of each other. People felt what the goal of the organization was and was working as teams to achieve these goals. So that was a great satisfaction for me.
We certainly felt like a family under you, Hans. So thank you for that.
Thank you for saying that.
And what has been the most rewarding part for you in leading people? Of course, you've mentioned a couple of things, but what stands out for you?
Well, I think what stands out, or what is rewarding for me, is when I see people succeed in what they are doing, succeed and get recognition for it from the outside. For example, when somebody delivers a course at the CSUN Center and the hosts or the participants in the course come back and say what a great course it was and how this X, Y, and Z, they did a great job teaching. So that is very satisfying. And again, going back to my days as a professor, what was very satisfying was to see students succeed in their careers after that graduated, and that I have had many situations where students have gone on to great careers, and of course it's nice for my ego when they say I had some part of it, but of course most of it is their own hard work, and if I had some part of it, that's even better.
What do you think are the crucibles that might have shaped you in building tenacity as a leader? There must have been tribulations.
Well, I think I've been reflecting on that from time to time, and I think it's partly a quiet underlying self-confidence that I have a set of values that I've managed to stay close to throughout everything that I've done. And I have not tried to, at least excessively, try to benefit myself from positions I've had, such as the one at the CSUN Center or previously at the Hong Kong Monetary Authority. I've always felt I work for the organization. I'm confident that I can do a good job. And that's been reasonably successful, I believe.
And if I could connect that with my question on purpose, could you share your perspective on work, given, you know, all this discussion on work-life balance? Do you see it as work-life balance or work-life integration? How do you view work after all these years, Hans?
One way to answer that question is to say what I always say to people, say, why don't you retire and do something fun? And I say, I'm doing something fun. Why should I change? I love what I'm doing. I loved what I was doing at the CSUN Center. I love what I'm doing now at the Asia School of Business, trying to set up this new program. And so it's, of course, there are times when there's stress put on you. You have to deliver something on a short notice, and that might seem like it takes away from your personal life, but that those are fleeting moments, and I really haven't had that problem myself. Of course, I can understand this as others might, and of course, that is something as a leader you know, must watch out for. If you see that people are not happy at work in one way or the other, to try to understand why that is, and if you can make some adjustment in their way of working or the way that the organization wants them to work, then of course you should try to do so. And that's where I think flexibility in terms of work environment, work hours, and the sort of demands that are being put on staff is very important.
You strike me as someone who wakes up on a Monday morning saying, "Alleluia, it's Monday.
I can go to work." Yes, yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Moving on, Hans, what habits do you include in your daily routine to strengthen your leadership skills?
Well, I try to connect with coworkers in order to understand their concerns. And by that, being able to understand if there are issues that need to be addressed, that where I can have some impact and influence. So I think communication with coworkers is extremely important, because that's the only way you can really find out what is going on in the office. And communication, of course, also means that you should be open to your colleagues coming to talk to you whenever they feel like it. And that's what I always try to do at the CSUN Center. My door was open almost all the time. And eventually, I think colleagues felt like they could just pop in whenever they wanted to have a word or had some comment to make on the work they were doing or on the work of the center as a whole.
And talking about waking up on a Monday morning, as a leader, what drives you to get out of bed in the morning?
I think it's the excitement of seeing the organization going forward, to having a goal and going to work in the morning and say, what can I do today to move us forward, closer to the goal where we want to be? And that is as part of the restructuring we were talking about earlier. That was a part of what drove me then, to try to design a structure that could best serve the institution and the vision we had for the institution. And that's what drives me now when I go to work in the morning, to design and provide the curriculum and other aspects of the new Master of Central Banking program.
How do you balance the act of caring for people under your leadership with motivating and encouraging them to stretch themselves? You talk a lot about empowering people, as well as taking risks, allowing them to take risks and perform better at work.
It's important to allow coworkers to experiment in their jobs, to take initiatives, and to encourage such initiatives in terms of whatever they happen to be working on, if it's preparing for a course or writing a research paper. And of course, there are times when initiatives will not work out, and then you should not criticize, because the point is to encourage people to take initiatives, and if you criticize when things go wrong, then people will stop taking initiatives. It's too simple just to sit back and do whatever you've done in the past. So encourage initiatives, be supportive when they're being tried out, and understanding if things don't turn out as well as they was expected. And of course, be extremely supportive and encouraging when things work out in the right direction.
A crucial aspect of leadership hinges on conflict management at the workplace. What are your strategies for effective conflict management, whether it involves you in a conflict with others or between your staff?
Here, I think, again, coming back to something I said before, communication is very important. To understand, first of all, the source of conflicts, and that involves when it's not your own, when you're not involved directly yourself, it involves, of course, talking to all the parties concerned, try to understand what the issues of the difficulties are, and then propose solutions and see if you can work out some arrangement whereby the source of the conflict is addressed. If it involves yourself, then of course you have to ask yourself whether I am the problem, or if it's a problem with someone else, or what exactly is the nature of the issue. That's not easy, because to try to acknowledge that you may not be behaving in an appropriate way, or you're setting standards that are inappropriate for one reason or another, that takes courage, and it takes a certain amount of self-confidence, and others will have to judge whether I have done a good job in that or not. I do not feel that I have had particular problems in that respect, but I also hope that when conflicts have arisen in organizations where I've been, that those involved have felt like I've dealt with them in a reasonable and fair manner. I think fairness is something very important when you deal with conflict issues, that everybody must feel that they're being listened to and being treated fairly, even if someone is perhaps more at fault, but at least they've been listened to.
Thus far, what jumps out from this conversation that I've had with you are concepts on integrity, fairness, communication, understanding people. And did these things come to you naturally, Hans, or did you have to learn how to practice some of these?
I think they've come to me naturally in a sense that I have not consciously taken courses or coaching to deal with these situations. But of course, I have certainly or probably failed at some times in the past, and I've learned from that. I don't want to get into particular situations, but there are times where I could have done better, and you learn from that. And it's not clear to me that one could have prepared for that in an intellectual way. Mm. by saying this is how you should behave in this and that situation. I think because situations evolve and you can never predict in advance what you will be faced with. So experience, learning by doing, and hoping that eventually you'll get it right.
A follow-up on that. What do you think has been your biggest challenge in your leadership journey, and how did you overcome this?
I think the biggest challenge was really to manage the restructuring of the CSUN mm-hmm. Center. And that, I of course had the support and help of some colleagues, which I was very close to at the time. And again, I think I managed it for myself in any case by understanding the reason behind the need for restructuring, making sure that every decision that I took was focused on where the organization, where I wanted the organization to go. And again, coming back to something you mentioned, I've mentioned myself, trying to be as fair as possible to all concerned, those who unfortunately had to, could not find a position in the new structure, and try to understand their concerns and be as helpful as possible. That was a big challenge. I think it worked out well for the organization. For myself, it was a good learning experience, and for those who were employed by the center as a result of the restructuring, I think it's been a good journey for them, I hope. For those who went to other careers, I've been extremely pleased to learn that several of them, in fact, most of them have found jobs outside. In some cases, probably better jobs than they had. It's a CSUN center, so that's also nice to see that, from something which at the time wasn't perhaps very pleasant, or certainly wasn't very pleasant, something good came out of it for these individuals as well.
Hans, you come across as a person who is very people-centric, despite being a top-notch economist. I'd like your views on what you think is the number one reason why people fail as leaders, and how do you think leaders can avoid it or recover from it?
I think the main problem, the main reason why leaders fail is that they stop looking at after the good of the organization they're working for and think about their own benefits or how they can get the most out of the position they are in. That will never end well, because eventually you will take decisions which are not good for the organization. That means that staff will recognize it as such, and they will stop believing that you are truly focused on their growth and the growth of their the company they're working for, and they stop believing in the vision and goal of the organization, and eventually then they will stop doing their job as well as they could.
So do you think it's important to have a leadership philosophy, and how can a leader best put that philosophy into practice?
Well, my philosophy, that's using a big word, but is to lead by example, that I try to act in a way that when people see what I'm doing, they understand I'm working with them and for also the their own benefit. Because if the organization is well run, then all staff members will benefit. So I am not sort of develop a philosophy in the sense I will write down a book and say these are the five steps to a successful leader. That I cannot do. I say, do what is good for the organization. Don't let your ego get in the way from doing your best.
Wonderful. If you could travel back in time, what piece of leadership advice that you know now would you have given yourself when you had your first leadership role? That's a tricky one.
Let me think about it for a second.
Sure. Let's move on. Has there been a role model of a leader whom you look up to for leadership inspiration? And if so, why this particular person?
No particular person comes to mind. I think leaders who come across as having a certain amount of humility is something that I would look up to. I can't, on the top of my head, identify such an individual, but I'm sure that in the past I've said, well, that's really a nice quality that person shows. Mm-hmm. And again, it comes back to the idea of not focusing on yourself, but focusing on the organization, the co-workers and colleagues foremost.
My final question to you, Hans. As someone with a wealth of leadership experience spanning several decades and having worked in different organizations in both the West and the East, what advice would you give the young leaders out there who aspire to climb the rungs of leadership? I would like to pose this question in the context of the complexities that have surfaced in this age of relentless disruptive forces, and therefore seek your perspectives as to whether the leadership skills needed today might be different from, say, 10, 15 years ago.
Let me answer this perhaps in the following way. I think it is very important in the environment of rapid change not to focus on fads and instead look at what's fundamentally changing in the environment in which you're working. Of course, it's not easy to distinguish with what might be a fad and what might be an enduring change. But this is where it's essential for a leader to be willing to listen to opinions of co-workers, be open to understand the environment, reading books on developments in my case in the world economy, in the world of central banking, but also in other subjects which might be seem unrelated. What comes to mind is, of course, issues related to cybersecurity, which will eventually impact central banking. There are other areas, climate change, inequality. You must have an understanding of the broader picture in which you are operating. But then you also cannot become too distracted by all these developments. You must keep a focus on your core objectives, the core objectives of your institutions, which are typically much more limited than all the problems that afflict the world. So by understanding what the environment is, but keeping a focus on what you can and are supposed to achieve, then hopefully you can lead an organization to achieve what that organization has been set up to do.
Would you like to come back to that question on the leadership advice that you know now, which you would have given yourself when you had your first leadership role?
I've struggled with that one, and I really can't think of anything, so sorry about that.
That's okay, Hans. I guess in your case, your leadership style is more of doing what is right as situations evolve. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's right. I think it's... I have evolved. I can't say that there's anything that I... anything fundamental that I would have done, should have done differently, knowing what I knew at the time. After the fact, you can say, well, I should have perhaps known that this was going to be the outcome, but you didn't at the time. So then you can't have regrets, and I don't really have any regrets about what I have done in major situations and throughout my career.
You sleep well at night, I assume.
I do.
Thank you very much, Hans, for sharing your perspectives and nuggets of wisdom. If I were to choose what primarily will I remember you for, it certainly is that you have been the most calm, collected, and centered, yes, the three C's boss I have ever had in my own professional journey. Calm, collected, and centered. That's what you are, Hans. May I, on behalf of the CSENS Step Up to Lead podcast, wish you all the best as you continue to be an inspiring leader. Well, listeners, that's all the time we have. We hope you have enjoyed this podcast. Till we connect again, may I wish you an incredible journey in stepping up to lead yourself and others. Thank you.
Thank you, Geraldine.